This is HBR episode 2456 entitled HBR Community News for December 2017 and is part of the series HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers and is about 87 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HBR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in December 2017.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hi, everybody. My name is Ken Fallon, and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today, it's HBR Community News for December 2017. And joining me, as ever, is Dave. How are you, Dave?
Hi, Ken. I'm fine. Yourself?
I am surviving here very well. Thank you very much. So, yes. HBR is an internet pod radio show, a podcast that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. And what differentiates HBR from other podcasts is that we are a crowdsourced from the community, fellow listeners like you. There's no restriction on how long the shows can be or on the topics that they cover, so long as they're not spam and are of interest to hackers. Every so often, we better do that, Dave, just to remind new people what we are and to remind old people that it's time to send in a show.
Hint, hint.
Exactly. This year has been full, Dave. It's all full up and we're ready into the new year. And as we've had no hosts this month, no new hosts this month, I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to go through the list of people who have taken their time to contribute in the last year. And starting alphabetically, let's list them in groups of four, Dave.
Back
it's almost
in camp.
As if we haven't rehearsed this before.
Yeah. We rehearsed the preparation, but we didn't rehearse the doing. So there's many a slip going to happen, I'm sure. But anyway, on we go.
Do you want to go first or shall I?
I'll start if you like. So we have in the first four, we have, and it's alphabetically sorted. So the first one begins with an at sign, at Ina Bina. We have Ahuka, Andrew Conway, and Be Yeezy.
Then we have Biza, Bill NFMZ1 Miller, Bitbox, and BJB.
Bob Jonkman, Brian, another Brian in Ohio, and Christopher M. Hobbs.
Then we have Tlake, Claudio Miranda, Clinton Roy, and Cobra 2.
Next is Curtis Atkins, who goes by C Prompt with an up arrow at the end, and some guy called Dave Morris, Dave Yates, and David Whitman.
We have Deep Geek, Doe, Droops, and Epicanus.
And we have Eric Duhamel, 5150, Frank Bell, and FTH.
We have Gedez, Hannah of Terra of Sol, the HPR volunteers, and the HPR Audiobook Club teams.
We have, we have Ironic Sodium, Jezra, John Culp, Jay Rulo.
JWP, weirdo name Ken Fallon, Klaatu, and Knox.
Lander, Lost in Bronx, Mirror Shades, name always throws me, sorry, Mirror Shades, Matt King, USA.
Murwi, Mongo, Mr. X, and NY Bill.
Only Half the Time, Operator, Kuvmo and Reg A.
Shane Shannon, Sigflub, Spaceman, and Steve Sainer.
Swift 110, I think he calls himself. Taj Sara, the Alien Brothers podcast, ABP, and The Dude.
The Love Bug, Tony Hughes, aka Tony H1212, various hosts, and Venom.
And last two, Windigo and Zoak.
And those are the people who made HBR possible this year. thank you to each and every one of those people for helping out, because without them, there would not have been the 260 shows that made up this year's podcast. Thank you to each and every one of you.
Absolutely. I applaud everybody who contributed.
It's awesome, isn't it? Again, another year. We've gone through another year.
Yeah. How can this thing... Yes. Why doesn't it sink and disappear? And it just keeps going, and it's a wonderful thing. I really love it.
Because people send in shows, Dave. That is the only reason it keeps going. People send in shows. Very, very simple. There will always be some sucker here who will do the background stuff, but so long as we have people sending in shows, we'll be grand. Anyway, this show goes through the shows that were put on last month, and there was a fine selection of shows, starting with Server Basics 102 by Klaatu. Is that a US thing, the 101? Class 101 is the very first class, and you start with the year one and then zero and the first class?
Do you know, I have no idea. The 101, 102 thing is has occurred lots of times, but I've never actually bothered to go and find out why. Why does it start at 100? Why does it go into... Yeah, what happened to the other ones?
Dave, if there was only a professor out there who worked in the... In fact, a director, perhaps, in a university institution that could answer this burning question for us.
Yes.
Well, that's too much to ask for.
I don't know who on earth we're calling, but please pop up and tell us.
Anyway, Klaatu was talking about SSH, changing SSH ports, using SSH keys, etc., etc., etc. And 0xf10e said, yum, what provides? Hi, Klaatu. What's more bothersome about sudo yum what provides asterisk bin semnage or semanage than searching for all the SE Linux packages and installing them to maybe get the right tools installed? That's a feature I really like about yum. So no need to jump through hoops like installing apt file and updating its necessary database. I must say, yeah, I was quite impressed with yum and now DNF.
Yeah. Well, yes, I don't know. I don't know if apt has the same thing. I used to be an RPM user way back in the midst of time. So yeah, the what provides stuff was back in the RPM command as well, wasn't it? I'm not sure if apt does the same. There's a DPG minus L and stuff where you can poke around with the guts of the database. But
yeah, it's more complex.
Yeah.
But I think probably the later versions of apt have improved on that.
Maybe aptitude does it. I don't know. There's so many layers on apt.
Yeah, they've recently updated apt itself, so it includes apt search, so you don't have to go apt-get, apt-cache search. So it's all wrapped up in the one program called apt now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's cool.
Okay, following day, HPR volunteers talk about the community news. We mustn't have said anything mind-boggling because nobody commented.
We didn't say enough for people to disagree with or ask any questions.
Exactly.
Just trying to avoid these things.
We're going to have to come up with some sort of fictitious sort of thing for people to get ruffled about. The next day we had Interface Zero Playthrough Part 3, and there were four comments on this. This is the Klaatu, Lobath, and Taj playthrough, the RPG session. And the first comment was from me, where I say, no! What the bananas? Not again with the let's stop here. This is HPR, where there are no limits to how long a show can be. You want to read the next one?
I'm just wondering if they maybe needed to have a break of some sort at the end of that. But this guy Ken Fallon says, ignore him. Keep sending in loads of shows.
And Jurillo says, is there a link to the free guide you mentioned? I was listening to the show and you talked about the free guide. I was expecting a link to the notes. Where would I find it? It sounds useful.
Klaatu replies, free guide. Jurillo, I'm not sure which free guide we were talking about, but there are two that come to mind. A voucher for a free copy of Pathfinder Rules, which I was offering as a special HPR promotion. As of this writing, I've given them all out, so the giveaway is over. All is not lost, however. Number two is Pathfinder is published under the Open Gaming License, so the rules are online for free. The official reference document for Pathfinder is here, and he gives a link. There's another one which has a different interface and integrates more third-party stuff here, and he gives another link. And I had to scroll down there, which meant I had to take my finger off the stoked. Anyway, you don't want to know this. Note, if anyone reading this comment is brand new to RBG, though, I do highly recommend a beginner set for either D&D or Pathfinder, because the beginner sets make character creation really easy, and they use a reduced set of rules and just generally help you ease in. You should be able to find a beginner box at your local game store or at an online bookseller. It's worth it, I promise.
Nice.
Yeah, very cool, man.
So the next day we had GNU Orc, more about loops, from Dave the Man Morris.
Yes, and there were two comments, one of which was mine.
Shall I read John then? Wrong, yeah, comments. Okay. Orc Part 8. It is strange what people pick up in a tutorial. For instance, I'd never run a program using echo nn pipe .forward/program.arc. It's a very handy little construction. I even popped the divisor program into my bin and named it isPrime, just so I can ask echo 1913 pipe isPrime and get the answer. It's often the little off-the-cuff details that catch attention. Thanks.
So I said, thanks, Ron. I'm glad you found something of interest in the episode. This is really a Unix thing. The echo command writes to stdout by default. And
which is standard out for those of you...
Standard out, yes.
...who are not going down to a clinic.
Yes. But and orc reads... And orc reads from... No, it's not ST. Standard in, okay. Unless you tell it otherwise. So joining the two like that in a pipeline, as it's called, achieves a useful result very simply. So
yeah,
thank you.
I use that all the time.
It's so wonderful. When I worked on VMS, we had VMS as our main system, and we had a few Unix boxes. And it's so frustrating to go to the command line on VMS where you did not have that sort of pipe kit. You had to save stuff in a file and then pick it up from the file and so on.
Oh, dear.
They added it later because it must have been nagged so much, but they're about the same age, VMS and Unix, but they never thought to do that sort of thing, and it's wonderful. Anyway.
The following day was Lost in Bronx with Internal Logic of Stories. Talk about stories and story consistency. Two of the examples he gave was Star Trek's Warp Drive and Star Jump Concept. I was enthralled with this episode.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And he's really the guy to talk about this sort of stuff. And it's obvious when he says what he said, but it's it's not necessarily a thing you would think about too much unless you were considering the structure of stories or you wanted to write something yourself, I guess.
Yeah. Now I've been struggling with a few ideas for a science fiction story. One of them I threw out because Lost in Bronx went and did his own show that was 100 times better than mine. Thank you very much. But when you start thinking about it and you go, and this internal consistency, I was thinking, right, I want to write a story where they, where very little changes. Like everything has to be plausible. Everything has to be, it has to be actual physics. So how do you deal with that? And I was thinking, okay, genetically splicing in that thing from the toads where you can freeze people, so making long-term space travel actually a thing. But then how would that work in your story? And then I was thinking, okay, well, if everybody goes to sleep for 100 years and then you come awake for a day and then you go to sleep again for 100 years and then you awake for a day, then you have yesterday's messages coming in from ships that are going different distances and stuff, so you could maybe do long-term travel there, but then I just get a headache and more awake instead of trying. The whole purpose was to try and get me to sleep, but I was thinking, God, how do you actually write out these stories? That would actually be a good show, just to get more of this type of thing. Long story short, love the show, wish Lost in Bronx could do more about that.
Yeah, it's fascinating having an insight into these sort of concepts. And as I said, he's somebody who's thought a lot about this.
And you have to, of course, maintain consistency in every story that you do or every series.
Yeah. Even though you might want to embellish what you've thought of earlier when you come up with a better idea, you've got to be quite careful about doing that, or how you do it, or not doing it at all. Yeah,
exactly. Okay, the following day, how to save bad beans or The French Pest. And it was by Cobra 2, and I use a French Pest all the time. And he makes a perfect cup of coffee. And that was the day as well that we had the memorial sent in by Claudio M. For Lord D, who had passed away a year before. It's hard to think it was just a year.
It doesn't seem like a whole year has gone by, no. Very, very poignant.
But the episode itself was quite good. I'll use coffee beans, or I use a French press all the time.
Well, I was listening to this, and I certainly I use French press a lot. I've got a liter one, which is metal and is, sort of a... keeps coffee hot afterwards. And
yeah, another one, yeah.
I'm not sure I agree that pre-ground coffee is inherently poor, which is what I thought he was saying. However, since I listened to that, I was thinking more about it. I've got my son's burr grinder here because he's away at the moment. And I thought, I've not bothered to open it or use it or anything. So I thought I'll give it a shot. And having made coffee with pre-ground stuff, and then did that, and Cobra 2 is completely right. It proved his point wonderfully, I thought.
So the next day we had Server Basics 103 and Firewalls Felt.
Did we not have a comment or two on that one?
Oh, we did, two, in actual fact. Sorry about that. Klaatu says coffee. Of course it would be Klaatu. Coffee. I have to admit, most coffee I come across in New Zealand is so amazingly good that there's a part of me that risks the really... bad coffee of my youth, dripping coffee that's been sitting on the burner for 2 hours, or the percolated coffee that's steeped in itself for 45 minutes, the bad petrol station coffee that you have to dump all kinds of flavor into it to manage to drink it. The plunger makes a big difference, though. For the record, I do not use a plastic plunger. I found a nice metal one, and it's super durable and really good. Go off and make some good coffee.
Cobra 2 replies, coffee, I enjoy that cup. I myself am steeping some coffee as I write this on a tiny screen mere feet away from a real keyboard. I found over the years that once you move to a French press, it's really hard to go back to a drip coffee maker. I never had the stomach for diner coffee. And in all fairness, I never appreciated coffee until leaving the deep south of the Great White North, for the Great White North, mostly due to everything being bad coffee. Interesting.
Everything being bad coffee in the south or in the north?
South, I would imagine he meant. Yeah. Are they talking about the sort of thing where you put coffee in a filter and let water drip through it and catch it in the bottom and keep it hot on a plate forever? Because we had one of those at work, and you'd leave it. People would leave the coffee in there for an hour or two. By God, it was incredibly awful at the time it stewed for a while.
There. And then you don't clean out the bottom thing, and you just put in more at the top. Yes, that's the key there.
And it's baked on the bottom of the glass
container.
Or
you just throw more water in at the back and squeeze out more. Yes,
I can taste it now.
Yep. Okay, Server Basics 103. It's almost like we've been here before. Firewalls and failed to ban. X1101 says, Klaatu, I'm moving my comments to the comment thread so people can see respond as well. Thank you for your continued effort in demystifying the mystic arts. I feel like this set will be a good resource for onboarding people interested in going from I use Linux to I manage Linux servers.
Yeah, cool. He's quite right.
Cool. Yes, the only thing about fail to ban is that it's a good idea. But I think he also mentioned that it can take a half an hour or so to pick up on the fact that you're being bombarded, by which time a half an hour has gone past.
Yeah. We ran it at my work for a little while, but I think we moved on to more expensive and sophisticated things to do that type of stuff.
But ideal for the home enthusiast.
Yeah. For if you're running just your own small server, then that's a great solution.
So the sound of Woodbrook Quaker Study Center in the spring. This will be in our soundscapes series, Dave, if we ever had one.
We should make one.
Oh, and we also have that request to make one for...
Ahuka
made a suggestion as well.
Yep.
Oh, to do. STL Sean says, peaceful. I have the habit of studying in the back room of my house with the only hum of a fan and some music in the background. I enjoy putting this on loop while I was trying to trudge through a very dry book on learning Linux. That reminds me, I should do an episode on more mature adults seeking their first degree. Maybe, I don't know. I've never done anything like recording, audio recording, but I have never attended a college before last year either. Yeah, that's that translates as a Omiya show one, don't you think there?
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, STL Sean. Yes. Shall I make the account now?
It does sound like something that would be very, very interesting to listen to, though, I have to say. It's always good to know how people deal with learning things, because it gets more difficult as you get older, too. And, you know, that would be fascinating. I'm sure there'd be many of us that would be most interested in hearing his journey.
Absolutely.
Tony Hughes replies to Sean saying, "Thanks for the comment. I'm glad you found it helpful in your studying. Linux books can be quite dry and daunting with all the unfamiliar language when you're first starting, but worth persevering with. You don't need any special skills to record a show, just a digital audio recorder or PC, phone, tablet, etc., and the ability to send that audio file to HPR via the net. All the rest can be taken care of by the wonderful team of volunteers who do such a great job with little recognition. As Ken and Dave often say, you now owe us a show." Lol. Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Yes.
Actually, you can also physically put it on a USB stick and mail it to me if you want. And I would like to thank Kivnu, who sent me a postcard.
Oh, nice. Very nice. See it,
all the way from in Idaho. Absolutely awesome. And I'll be sending him back a postcard as well from beautiful wherever it is that I am. All you hackers out there, see if you can send me a postcard.
Ah, yes, there's a challenge.
Not a really very difficult challenge, to be told, but yeah. Anyway, the following day we had PD Menu. I have been using this tool for over a year now and I really like it. I love this, Dave, and I was looking for this. I used to do loads of these in Bash. I had a Ken's Multipurpose Super Disk, which is right up there, that you put into a DOS computer, put a DOS menu up, and then you follow the things, and technicians could basically blow machines away at the weekend, load them from the network, pixie boot, and all the rest before there was stuff like that. So, yeah, awesome.
Yeah. It's old school, but good stuff. I do believe. I'm sure many people would find it useful.
Because I was thinking, right, on a Raspberry Pi display, you know, one of those three line jobs, and have that menu come up, and a potentiometer with a clicky thing on it that you can scroll down, click. Right there, you've got the basis for a audio, you know, a player or something, or an internet radio station.
Ooh,
or something.
I like that.
And that's the thing about working, or you know, when you get interested in Linux, yeah, all these programs that are like from 20 years ago, and people go, "Oh no, we've moved on. Everybody's got a 4G graphic card with a, you know, flaming Timotron on it." And then all of a sudden, you know, you've got these small little screens and small PCs, and you can dust off one of these programs, and suddenly you've got an interface that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I just bought a small, very, very tiny screen to go with the Raspberry Pi. It's about the size of a Pi Zero. And I don't know. I've not powered it up yet. Not soldered the headers on it yet. But it's one of these persistent white ones. So it'd be great for that.
Cool, the OLED ones.
Yeah. You've given me a good idea in that. That's definitely going to get done.
That's a show, Dave, if I ever heard one. Well, Breezy said, "Need to give this a try. Great show as always. I have a few command line access and programs I've written using YAD that would be great to group together into a menu. I'll check out PD Menu for this. Thanks."
Yeah, excellent. Thank you, Be Easy. I should have answered in the comments, actually, but I completely forgot. But yeah, well, good luck. I hope you do get to use it and enjoy it.
Then we had Interface Zero Playthrough Part 4. And the following day after that, we had Information Underground Backward Capitalism. To which Frank says, and you can do this one.
You're too quick for me, Ken. I'm
but if
too
you didn't
slow-key.
Say anything, from saying silence would have get this out, and nobody would know the difference, Dave.
No, I know.
You let yourself down every time.
I just just don't care. But anyway, yes, Frank says, well done, a fascinating and timely discussion. So, yes, it was an interesting yes. discussion.
It was. It was nice. I'm liking discussions like this. You know, the whole point of HBR originally when they were discussing it back in Radio Freak America days was exactly this, a round table discussing political topics. So true to our roots, this is what this is. I've been thinking about the universal social income as a concept recently. They've been trying it out here in the Netherlands as well. I'm interested to see how that would pan out and how human nature would probably turn it into something different than people think.
Is that a sort of guaranteed income for
yeah,
everybody?
So instead
type
of
concept?
Yeah, exactly. Regardless of who you are, your status, no means test, everybody gets a flat income, you know, sufficient to put a roof over your head and food on the table. So regardless of who you are. So then there's no applying for, you know, this benefit or that benefit or the next benefit or whatever. And there's no danger that if you do go into work for additional money, that your benefits will be taken away from you. So that you actually end up, you know, bringing in less than you would have if you were claiming all the benefits. So
That's very advanced.
Yeah, it is, but it's not as freaky. I mean, it actually costs savings from governmental control because there's less bureaucracy involved in it, and they also see that people tend to work 10% less, which is basically half a day a week less, but people still do go into work. But it pays, you know, people, if you're artistic or whatever, that you can, you know, just take the time off and you're not going to starve. You know, you're not going to have a great life on that sort of income, but you can continue to do whatever it is that you want to do. That'll be an interesting one.
You've got a springboard to move on to better things as well, haven't you? Yeah, guaranteed. I mean, springboard. It's yeah. Wow, I never thought I'd see that happen. Have you read Cory Doctorow's Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom?
No, I have not.
He's sort of putting forward the view that the future will consist of something like that, where the thing that people work for is not money, but to be sort of kudos.
Yes.
Woofie is it's called. But that seems to be a start of that road in some respect. But,
I would hope so. However, looking back at history, which we should always do, you know, and serfdom and all the rest, I'm not as happy at predicting how well it could turn out.
No, I need better minds than mine to understand how it will ramify into the future. But it's amazing. It's an amazing thought. I didn't know that. I think I better move, actually. I'm in the wrong country.
Well, actually, I think it's been running in Finland for a while. So there are pilots around the globe at the minute to see. But we'll see what happens. Anyway, Git server and Git hooks. This one is very interesting to me, especially Dave, because of our current approach to publishing shows.
Yes.
Better tell people what it was about. When you check in stuff into a branch in Git or a particular thing, you can have that act trigger something else happening, and that might be sending an email or running a set of test tools or something else. So the simple act of checking something in can start a chain reaction, and that could in fact be how we do quite a lot of things, Dave. How we could actually drive a lot of the workflow on HPR by something as simple as that.
True. Yes. A sort of trigger based mechanism.
Yes.
Sounds good. Yeah. I knew about this, but I've never really delved into it. I did one of those things several years ago that somebody was mentioning earlier on this evening, but reading dry books, and I sat down trying to read the Git manual.
Oh, wow. God, will somebody please do a few series on Git, please.
It's so hard to read.
I cannot, my mind just cannot get it, but I have four commands that are run one after the other, and that seems to work, but I have no idea what about branching and about whatever. And Klaatu talks about it, but it's still not coming through. Anyway, the following day.
No, the full picture is hard to get. But yeah, a great show. I wanted to say that I found it very, very interesting indeed, and motivated to dig deeper now.
Okay, and Kevin O'Brien has just emailed me now to say we still have the same uploading, which is not good. Okay,
indeed, it is not good.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
Speak of the hacker, and they will appear. Yes, I didn't think it would. I didn't think that issue would be fixed by changing the permissions, because I had already uploaded before. But I'll have a look and see what it is. Is it related to the file size, or is it related to something else?
Yeah, I didn't think the file size was unusual. I mean, I upload FLAC, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I really don't. Anyway, but I have all day tomorrow on the New Year show to play with it.
Happy New Year.
You too. Are you going to stick around?
Yeah.
Okay, you know where the links are? I'll paste them into the chat. Hold on one second.
Okay.
There you go. And we're talking about HPR 2447, Server Basics 104, OpenVPN. And I asked Klaatu, does he have any show notes to go along with that? Because as it happens, Guy in work has asked me about setting that up. And that would be cool to have.
Yes, yes. Shall I read Klaatu's comment? He says, show notes. I do intend to write some notes on this topic. I have no useful links. This episode exists because I can't find a how-to online that's any good. They all presume the reader is familiar with how a certificate infrastructure works, or they assume the reader knows all about the network, all about network routing, and so forth. So for now, the audio version of show notes are embedded in the OGG file. Eventually, I'll write something up. Ideally, I'll write down the entire server series. So that would be good if you
did that. The audio version of the show notes are embedded in the OGG file. Does that mean go listen to the show and write the show notes yourself?
It did feel like
it feels a little bit like that, yeah.
Tiny bit of circumlocution to say, just listen. Yeah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So following day 2448, useful bash functions, part 3. This time it's personal. And STL Sean says, fascinating. I worked with DOS, and by the way, this is your show where you were going read value, check value, read and check value. Some interesting, and there are, as always with all your shows, truth be told, Dave, you have excellent show notes with excellent examples to work through.
Thank you.
So, and some of these I would actually use.
Well, that was the goal, really. These are things I've written for myself, and I just thought, well, share them and talk about them, and maybe somebody will get some benefit from them. But hopefully they will.
That set space minus X is quite useful, actually.
Yes, you get a cascade of stuff when you do it, but it's really powerful and useful stuff.
You know, you can also run that on the command line going bash space dash X and then the name of your script, and it'll run it the same as well.
Yes, yes, yes. There's all sorts of different ways of setting those options. In fact, there's loads and loads of them, and I'm hesitating whether I want to dig deep into them. Might do one day when I've run out of show ideas.
Yes, exactly, when that happy day arrives. STL Sean says, I've worked with DOS and Windows for 25 years now. The only Unix experience was with a phone system and hotel system, which I administrated through a step-by-step procedure. I am now starting to learn a bit more command line Linux, as I have started playing with the Raspberry Pi computer and switched a couple of laptops to Xubuntu and Mint XCE. As you probably guessed, a lot of the show went over my head, but it's fascinating to hear the possibilities for automation that are available. If I could learn more bash commands. This series has been very helpful to me in developing a desire to learn more and find things I could try to automate. Thank you very much for your hard work, Sean.
And I said, thanks, Sean. I'm glad you found it interesting and hope this series proves to be useful to you. I plan to do more shows on bash functions and bash features in general in the future.
Do you want to read some, Kevin, or do you want to play along, or are you just sitting in for the... Okay, I'll do the next one. Mike Ray says, bash shows. Keep it coming, Dave. I do a lot of bash programming, mostly because I work on the assumption that if I need to type the same complex command line more than twice, it should be a script to cut down on typing, try and remember stuff, and to cut out errors. I don't enjoy bash programming very much, mostly because I hate not being able to use a normal language constructs like results equal function open bracket arguments close brackets. So the more tips and ideas from somebody else who faces the same question, the better.
So I said, thanks, Mike. Glad these are turning out to be useful. I've always been fascinated by what I guess can be called command languages. I've worked with the George operating system that had a fairly basic one, VMS, which had DCL, digital command language, which grew to be fairly sophisticated during my time using it. However, in comparison, I find Bash to be considerably more sophisticated, still not a true language with features like those you describe, but nevertheless worth working with, I think. It's this that motivates me to describe what can be done with Bash, and I amuse myself trying to do things that stretch my imagination a bit, smiley face.
And Mike replied, Bash_rematch. How about some shows about the various built-in variables? I have made use of bash_rematch, $excluded because I assume it'll break something, but I assumed that there are more that I have missed.
My reply was a great suggestion. On my list of future Bash topics, I have regular expressions quite near the top. That episode would include bash rematch, of course. I've mentioned one or two of the other bash variables in passing, such as func name, F-U-N-C name, but there are many more. Thanks for the feedback. By the way, with our new comment system, we strip HTML, but take measures to try and ensure all other ASCII characters pass through unhindered. So $, and I included a dollar just to prove it, shouldn't be a problem.
Yes, it's actually, I know it was a pain in the buttocks to do, but I'm quite happy with the way the bash or with the comment system as it's turned out.
Yes, we sweat blood a little bit getting that together, but it seems to be pretty robust, he says, touching wood. Looking good.
Indeed. And I should actually put at the bottom of the comments section, just before it says leave a comment, a repeat of the first, previous, and next button bar. What do you think?
That useful. Would be nice, because it would be easier to navigate once you'd scroll through the comments.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure, yeah.
Org mode, mobile solution. My search for taking org mode on the road, Brian in Ohio. A very, very nice little show. Pie Top, Pocket Chip, never considered that. Raspberry Pi tablet and an Android phone. And eventually settles on an Android phone, I think.
Yes, yes. He's an impressive guy. He goes to considerable length to get where he wants to be.
He is.
And he's documented it well, too. Excellent show.
And I went and installed Hacker's Keyboard as I was listening to that show. And it is much better. Oh, my God. You should not be using anything else on an Android phone than Hacker's Keyboard. It is brilliant. Brilliant.
I think my son told me that. And I don't think I've got it on this particular phone. But, yeah, I did use it for a while.
It's going to be the first thing I install on any phone. It's just so much better. Turn into landscape and you get tab and up arrow and it's awesome. And even in portrait, it's reasonable.
yeah, good. Well, we certainly learned a lot from Brian in Ohio's show here.
I was tempted to get one of those pocket chips, but yeah, a bit expensive. But still, and then the Pie Top, tempted, you know.
Yeah. I wanted to get one of those docking things that look like a laptop, but you can actually put a Raspberry Pi into it. I guess for putting some other portable device in, I can't remember. But they're so expensive on eBay now.
They're
100 plus pounds now, because people want them. So.
Yeah, exactly. And then, So, Android 4 and Viper 4, Android Magics by Operator.
Yes, this was to improve audio by methods I didn't fully understand.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get this, but it's interesting.
But it required all sorts of root and... to be honest, I think my ears are gone so bad that I couldn't be bothered with this. I'm sure this is one of the... That only applies to me now, but I'm sure there's somebody out there going, yes, thank you very much. But it was down to that under Windows it played fine, but under Android it was crippled. Was that the deal with this? Because I followed one of the links into this, and there was a chap had a video about it, and went through doing all the coding that they did to get this actually work.
I didn't dig that deeply. I did follow the links, but I didn't get that deep with it, so I'm not sure.
Server Basics 105 was OpenVPN client. Also without show notes. Tattoo. The show notes are in the WAV file. Thanks very much for that. So someday I'm bored, I'll write down the show notes for that. But I actually need to do this as well. So yeah. And the reason I need to do it is because my because of a bug, which I might do a show on. But we will carry on, possibly. So the following day, we had a hydraulic heavy scale project, episode 2452, a hydraulic jack mod DIY travel trailer balance. Never have thought of this as a show that we would have, but I'm exceedingly glad that we did get it.
Yes, I was telling. Yes, it was most interesting, I thought. Go on, Kevin.
Well, my wife and I are looking in a few years to retire, and we were thinking of getting some kind of a recreational vehicle, trailer, what have you. As I dig into it, a lot of revolves around understanding the weight distribution and the things that David was talking about. It was very useful for me.
So there were two comments on that episode. The first was from me. Retriever dog training. He made a comment in the show that the reason that they were doing this was that they were retriever dog training, but, quote, nobody on HBR would be interested in a show on retriever dog training, to which I replied, seriously, I don't think anyone will be interested in retriever dog training. I guess there'll be a show, I guess we'll not be doing a show about that. Seriously, words fail me. Also, happy birthday.
SDL Sean said, would love dog training. We'd love a show on retriever training. That would be so interesting. I think diversity is needed a bit. I mean, people are submitting great and wonderful tech, gaming, and discussion shows, but some rather off the wall stuff would be wonderful. Off the wall, but yeah, off the wall. And I absolutely agree. I think it would be wonderful to hear other insights into what people are doing. It's brilliant.
Has the popularity of person swimming down a river in France not inspired you to do this show? God, come on, guys. Seriously.
Yeah, yeah. We need somewhere where it's easy to find a list of all the weird and wonderful topics we've had on HBR in the past.
Is that would that be the Soundscape one?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, because
I do remember that one.
Oh yeah, yeah. He put a Sansa clip into his woolly hat, and he was swimming wearing a wetsuit or something, swimming down a river, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But we also with these, with that car hydraulic thing and all the shows John Culp has done on his car, we could be doing a motor, you know, a vehicle thing. And did you know that our own Pokey is a auto mechanic? So I expect a lot of shows from them, possibly a year late, but...
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think it would be a brilliant subject to have more of. It's interesting to... It's all about problem solving and stuff, yeah, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
I was fascinated by this one because I didn't realize how accessible a bottle jack would be. I thought it would just be one sort of welded shut unit, not a thing that could be dismantled. And did you look at the YouTube?
Oh, of course I did, Dave. Yes.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yes, it was.
I'd like to know how the hell you tap the thread in the bit that you've drilled into the sort of cylinder area. But I'd like
there
to see how that's done.
You screw in a screw, and then there's... have you ever seen a self-tap device at all?
Well, apart from self-tapping screws, no.
Well, if you think of, like, it's a bolt, yeah? And on the north, south, east, and west pole, you cut a quarter out so that there's 8 little pieces. So there's 4 pieces that have still got thread on it and 4 pieces that they've got a gap.
Oh, I know what you mean.
And
yes,
then you
yes.
You have a like a socket that you put over the top and you screw that in. So there are various different sizes. So you drill a hole, maybe 6 millimeter or something, adjust to imperial as applied. So your 6 millimeter one, the first one that you go in is almost 6 millimeters, but it's just the bare hint of a thread. So you screw that in and it has the bare hint of a thread going in, and that's enough to put in the next one, which has more a cutting tooth on the blade. And as you put that in, that cuts into the metal and you go increasingly from more aggressive ones from smaller ones to more aggressive ones, and you need to make sure to lubricate it as well with you can get, you know, aerosol cans of lubrication spray, or there's lubrication grease. Yep.
And you've got to be careful of the swarf that comes off as you cut as well.
Absolutely. And the worst part, the most difficult part, is keeping it straight for that initial
one. Yeah. Because I've used a tap. We were taught how to use taps and dies at school, but they were the sort of long tapered style, which I couldn't imagine how you could use something like that in with very little clearance. So, yeah.
Now, I think you can even rent tap sets from, you know, the big DIY stores. At least you can here, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool.
So, yes, mechanical engineering back in the day, being a mechanical engineer myself.
Although
I left the trade because I still want to maintain the number of digits I have on my hand.
there's many a line of work that could
very important to know your limits and boundaries. It's one thing to reboot a server accidentally. It's another thing to leave your digits some behind you.
Yes, having cut the end of my finger nearly 2 years ago, 3 years ago, cutting up a sweet potato.
Okay.
Any line of work could potentially threaten them and little pinkies.
The following day, various ways of deleting and undeleting on the command line using GNU readline. GNU readline seems to me like a very odd, it's like a program, but it's actually just the thing built into Bash.
Well, it's a library that you can build into all sorts of stuff, but it is definitely built into Bash. I think I said in the talk, it's in, if you're sitting there chatting to MySQL, then the thing you're talking through is a readline. So all the, there's history, there's all of the key signatures work, etc.
So the Alien Brother podcast, season 1, episode 02, Strictly Hacking. Casper and Ruther discuss the Uber hacks and the Intel Me known and unknown vulnerabilities. And there was one comment on this from a Trucker Rich. Delivery and content. The two of you came across as arrogant, and I feel you tried to hijack the HPR audience. I'm not, quote, your listener, quote, I'm a regular HPR listener, and it's pretty apparent that neither of you have listened for any length of time. If you had, then you would have heard Klaatu 100 times or more. You would understand what is meant by open source and free software for this community, and you would have realized that most hosts are just F**k smart, or smarter than you claim to be. That being said, I'd appreciate some of the topics that you have touched upon. You could do a whole show on the Bally Astrocade instead of just a brief diversion, and the Huawei background and info could be another show. Thanks. Anyway, thanks for contributing.
Hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Well, I think I need to quote Metallica here, you know, who's the first time here? Yay! And everybody goes boo. Yeah. And he always goes, well, they're here now.
Well, they did say something in the podcast that indicated that they had no idea who Klaatu was.
Yeah, well.
Which makes me think, okay, you don't listen to Hacker Public.
Well, not in the last month on here, because Klaatu's been carrying the show for the last 2 months, yeah.
Yeah. They weren't sure whether Klaatu was a man or a woman. So.
Okay, yeah. But there is no requirement that the people who host on the network listen to the network, guys. There is no requirement on that whatsoever. And
I wouldn't have phrased my comment the way Trucker Rich, but I was thinking of posting something that said, hey, you know, if you want to get to know Klaatu, just listen to Hacker Public Radio and you will.
Yep.
To give them their due, though, they did. I assume they recorded this in chunks or something, because they did come back later on and say that they checked him out and had listened to, or at least looked at, his GNU World Order website and stuff. So, you know, they seem to be learning on the job, as it were.
Yes, but you have to also remember that these guys could very well be pulling your leg here, that they have been listening to for the last 12 years, and then these personas that are doing the show, it would not I wouldn't put it past either of them to be pulling our legs, guys. Anyway, the fact is, they're here now. They're doing very interesting shows. And
it was a good show.
Yeah,
so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it too. It was long. I thought, oh no, I can't listen to all this. But I did, and I enjoyed it. So, thanks, guys.
The following day, we had Interface Zero RPG Part 5, the finale. Yes. To which I replied, guys, you're wasting shows. You could have split this in two. You can't please everyone.
Yes. And the way it follows on from the previous comment about, oh, you stopped too early. It was very good. Well done. Glatu says he forgot a link and handed in the link through the comments. I just replied to him today because I thought he deserved something if he didn't notice. I put the link into the show with an editor's note and did point out that he could send it in through admin at Acapulco Radio.
Yeah, we can do that as well.
Whichever. But it's if he was thinking that in the comments would get to people, I was just pointing out that on archive.org we're not propagating the comments.
Yeah.
So that's why I did say that. Yeah. So that's going to be an interesting challenge.
Yeah, and there's more because I'm now looking at when I search for Hacker Public Radio on Bing and other search engines, archive.org is coming up first, but Hacker Public Radio is not coming up first. There are other sites like Media Cloud or something that are taking the feed and just publishing it. So I think a lot of people might be missing the sources, but yeah, fine. I mean, it's the license allows that. I'm not complaining about it, but I'm also saying like we're not getting you mightn't get the footfall on the comments, which we may need to address in the fullness of time.
Indeed.
Yeah, more to think about. And that, Dave, was it?
Yes, that was it.
That was it for the year, in actual fact.
Quite a year.
It was a good year.
Mm-hmm.
We had your series on healthcare. Must thank you for that.
That was awesome. I just uploaded one more in that series.
Well, try to.
Whether it made it is another question entirely. But,
well, I have the links in the show notes to all of them, so I'll deal with that tomorrow. But I'm going to do some investigation. Oh yeah, let's go through the open issues. We've had a few open issues over the last month. Josh made a very valid point that we should be using the GitLab more. So instead of communicating, Dave and I quite often communicated on issues just an email to ourselves or copied Josh in on it. But tracking it on the GitLab is actually proving quite useful, I think, for everything.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. I'm happy to use that as a vehicle. And it means you have things that are marked as open and closed and stuff, so things are less likely to get forgotten.
And also people can follow along. So, for example, Kevin's one I've opened as GitLab issue 35. You don't have permission to access upload form, and Josh commented on that. So I'm going to do some more testing with the uploading to see what is it about this show that is... but Josh was able to upload it. It seems very strange. I'm trying to find some uniqueness in that, but
Sort of random interference type factor going on there, it seems like.
Yeah, I don't know, because we've had that before with it seemed to be linked to the file size, and then but with this show I've uploaded a show without problems before, smaller and larger. Mm-hmm. And then I uploaded this, and this didn't go through. So I thought, okay, maybe it's something to do with the file, but the changing permission on the upload form, that doesn't make a lot of sense because I haven't changed it because I can see that in Git. It's the same right. MD5 hash, and it's always had that permissions, and now it's not working. But it could be permissions perhaps to the upload folder. So I'm going to take the two PHP files and basically just put in lots of comments and see exactly where it's breaking. But the problem is, it's not consistently breaking for me. Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, I can tell you that I'm not doing anything different from what I was doing earlier in the year.
Yeah, I didn't doubt it.
So, I have no...
Yeah, no, it's just an interesting one. And it's another thing that we need to fix. But, again, if people are having problems uploading, contact admin@hackerpublicradio.org and we will not see you... see, we will get some other way. You can always, I now have a copy of the files from Kevin, and I have the show notes, so I can always just put them into the database and post them myself, so it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal because I want to make sure that we do get shows uploaded.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, another, I'm probably going to record another one.
So yeah, exactly. Don't let that stop you from continuing to record.
No, I can always just, you know, record a show or thing onto them.
Cool. So other open issues we have: the Internet Archive media files are missing their media tags. Which we have now identified a workaround. And that workaround is, Dave?
Well, the situation is that we upload the WAV file to the Internet Archive. And we've been doing this ever since we started doing this process. And what happens once it gets there is that their software turns it into what they call derived files. So it creates OGG and MP3 and FLAC and so forth. But in doing so, it does not propagate the tags. I wrote to them and said, your thing's not propagating the tags. And they said, no, we know that's the way, that's obviously the way they've designed it.
But, by design, yeah.
Yes, they just said, no, it doesn't. So, or something to that effect. I put it into the log on the issue. So what we're going to do is we're going to create all the necessary files ourselves, which means we're creating versions specifically for archive.org because they've got the acknowledgement of archive.org in the audio, and we're going to post those ourselves. We did a little test to prove that that would work, and it did. So that will mean that they will all have the tags. So I've got the software ready to do it, so we just need to get our workflow to
And I've modified the workflow so that it also produces the MP3 OGG and speaks, and I'm also throwing Opus into the mix as well, so we can have an Opus file.
Cool. There is the issue of perhaps going back through some or all the stuff that's uploaded and doing the same with them.
And also was discussing with you, should we also put up the original file as well, so the unedited file, in whatever format that happens to be.
Yeah.
Don't see why not, because then that would actually be very handy for us, because if we go to another platform, we can just take down the original file, and we will have it there forever and a day, and it will be by definition the best version of the file that we had, because that's the one we derived everything from.
Yes. Well, absolutely.
Yeah. If they allow us to do it.
We should do that if we're allowed to. I don't know that we would be stopped, but maybe they have limits that they don't make public. I don't know, but
we shall find them, like everything else with Internet Archive.
We
push the boundaries. And I would just like to say here and now that it is absolutely awesome to click on a link to the Internet Archive page and see how nicely everything is laid out, Dave. Largely to you, everything is consistent, everything looks great, embedded images, links to full show notes. It's brilliant what you've managed to do over there. You really deserve a pat on the back for that. Brilliant work.
Thank you very much. It's been something I've wanted to get working ever since I started doing this project, but it's only within the past few months that I've actually managed to get the software to do it, because it involves horrible things like reading through the notes to find it if they refer to any other notes, and then finding them and uploading them and stuff like that. So
yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it's there. It's good.
And we will be needing to go through the workflow more, Dave, because of this, but also because if we're going to move to a flat file structure on the website. Okay, here is another thing. In order to reduce the bandwidth, we've moved to archive.org, but we also want to reduce the overemphasis on PHP and MySQL, because every call to the page involves hitting the database. So there's really no need for that, and we can benefit a lot from caching, so we can't really do a lot of front-end caching now as a result of every page. Well, we could, but it would be just simpler to have a database in the background that we populate, and whenever something changes, it would trigger a change of a static page on the website. It makes everything a lot easier, and those pages could be cached into Git or sent out via rsync, so that a lot of the community members could have their own entire copy of the HPR website, so that if the project ever goes away or whatever, we have all the media and all the databases and everything that we need, just a simple Git pull away from us. And in order to do that, I'm thinking you've been working on the Postgres database, and that we have that as the main one. And then when you check that in, that triggers blah, 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 which updates the main database on the HPR website. And then we move to a lot of static files. So long story, even longer, is a request to people out there, if they have if people have recommendations for systems that do this, and I know we've had shows in the past of different Python-based and Ruby-based ways of doing this type of thing, I would love to hear a show about it, and not just a fanboy girl version of it, but yeah, here's my actual experiences, here's the things you need to look out for. It's expensive, it's cheap, it's processingly expensive, it's complicated, it's too simple, it's that sort of stuff, just to give us an idea of what direction we should go. Obviously, before we pick a direction, this will be discussed on the mailing list, but just no harm if people have thoughts about this, to record some shows and send them in and talk to us about that.
Yeah, I was thinking this sounds like it could be a show to start a series.
Absolutely. Everything can be a series.
Yes,
so I will start re-encoding the shows going back to episode one, actually, Dave. And how are you doing the older shows that you don't have the source files for?
Well, we agreed when we started to move into that territory that the process would grab the MP3 and would send that to archive.org and then let it derive from that. I think we agreed that that was the best we could do, given that we only had the MP3, not the original FLAC.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we had, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what it's doing at the moment. That's going to be more of an issue, though obviously we could derive the other ones ourselves with the tags if we wished.
Yeah, I'm going to... all new shows coming through... we'll have the derived content. So I'll probably start with the ones that have been posted in the last 10 days or the last 10, 20 days that are in the queue active now, and get those transcoded and sent to you. So you'll need to push them in. And then I'll just start by pulling down the files, any WAV files that there are there, and then if there's not a WAV file on archive.org, I'll just take the MP3 file from the HPR site and chug through each of them.
Yes, yes. Well, one thought was that since I have this workflow for doing the Internet Archive stuff, really it's possible that one could pull the MP3 and then do the transcoding of everything as part of that workflow. So
yeah,
maybe we should talk about how, because that would be something that you or I could run as we were uploading stuff, older stuff to the archive.
Yeah.
So
okay,
that, something like that.
And there's also come on, finish.
No, I was going to say we've been through more or less all of the any other business stuff, but there was the hosting and donations issue that we were going to talk about.
Yeah,
you haven't finished. Had you finished?
No, because I was thinking, something I've been thinking about as well is increasing the distribution. So there's, hello, still there?
Yep.
Yep.
There are other platforms that we could send to, like SoundCloud allows you to put so many days, so we could post up to there, and then the ones would drop off. And we could also, one thing that I've been wanting to do has been post videos to YouTube and Facebook, and I think Twitter are doing videos now as well, those other places, because there's a large audience over there that would be into that. So when I was rewriting the workflow, I was looking at some options for how would you make our essentially boring audio into an interesting show that would have a visual element towards it. And one of the options that I had was we would start with a flash banner that Richard Quirin did for us, the HPR logo with the splash mm-hmm. of color, and then we would have a the text to speech intro thing would do would also be just translated onto a burnt in slide, you know, the show and what it's about and the summary, the icon of the picture of the host that's doing it, that sort of thing, and then some stuff about HPR, the intro, and then for the show itself, I was thinking of just a static HPR logo with an oscilloscope, and in the oscilloscope was the frequency distribution of the person talking in the show, and then leave space at the bottom for the turn annotations on so that Google can do its text to speech thing, and then we get the transcripts of the show, which, you know, we could get people to go back and help out with. The other option I was thinking of was, so that actually works quite well, that's fine, but there's quite a lot of encoding involved in it, but okay, fine. The other option was, I have a frame buffer thing where I can take a print off of the website, and then scroll down the website during the show at the same speed of the show. So I'm not sure about that either. But you are contextually aware of the content, aren't you, in the show notes? But then I was thinking, after spending hours actually doing that and having FFmpeg pan from the top right down to the bottom, then it struck me, well, YouTube has the YouTube and Facebook both have the facility to put it in the show notes. So, you know, what's the point in having the show notes on the, you know, burnt into the images even?
Yes. Okay. Well, obviously, you know more about this than I do. So,
if anyone has any ideas about ways to do this, if you've got an audio file, what should we put as playing in the on the video file? Is it just enough to have the HPR logo there, or should we try and put the show notes up in some form or another? That's essentially it. And what's...
on YouTube, which I'm most familiar, do know of their logo on the image, but YouTube lets you post show notes under.
Yeah, exactly. So while it's cool and all to have an oscilloscope with the frequency distribution, is it just a waste of time when, you know, a one image video will be just easier?
It buys you.
Anyway, if people have comments, that would be awesome. Let me see. Are we finished with the open issues? GitLab not sending email. I don't know if that's still sorted.
I don't believe there are any problems. I'm certainly getting email from GitLab every time there's an issue change.
So, when you create an account, though, are you getting an email? I tried that and it didn't seem to work.
Know. Okay.
So we'll have
I thought it was a universal issue of GitLab not sending mail, but maybe there are still some corner issues there.
And on safely redirecting episodes to archive.org, we had a issue reported by Hammeron and about iTunes not working. Now, I've checked, I've contacted him or her again, and I asked a colleague to check in iTunes on the Mac, and that plays fine. It redirects and it plays the archive.org thing. And I checked in a virtual Windows virtual image, and iTunes also worked as well. It redirected without issue. So I'm trying to see, in both cases, this was new additions to the feed. So I'm just trying to get confirmation from him as to, or her, what sort of OS or version of iTunes or what feed. Maybe they're using an older feed or something. So just trying to get more information, basically.
Yep.
Or if anybody listening has iTunes or has an old PC with iTunes on it and that has subscribed, can you turn it back on and see if there's any issues with the feed? We'd appreciate that. That'd be cool. And then the last one was how best to make donations to HPR. So we had suggestions was a PayPal address, Patreon, a hidden product link, which... he's put up a donations plugin, and this is for Josh, who's given us a fairly extensive amount of bandwidth and stuff. So the last one I asked him to do was LibrePay as well, which is, since the Patreon thing has become quite interesting option. It's all Libre software and works on the I've actually gone through, I've emailed the guys to see if there's anybody available for an interview, but they haven't got back to me, but that's kind of obvious at this time of year. So
Patreon, they realize they made a huge mistake and have reversed course.
Yes, but as Tatu says in the press release, they only put a pause in it. They didn't reverse course. They just didn't go forward. There's no guarantee that they will. Whereas with this LibrePay thing, at least all the software is open, and if they go away, well, we can take the software and continue.
But now, I wanted to mention it because I was one of a number of people that went and canceled all of my Patreons, did that.
Yeah, as did I.
And I have put them back because my understanding is that many of the creators I support, that's how they get there. So I assume for LibrePay, the creator would have to go and set up.
Yeah, as well, yeah. So, well, what I've done is... I've cancelled, and I think I'll do as you said, reopen again. But I'm going to. I've also asked the content people that I support, ask them to set up an account on LibrePay. I mean, you set up an account, and you can have your money there, and you can just check it out, and you get hit with fees. How often it takes out. So, no harm to have a backup.
Nope. And if Josh sets that up, I may go over. I did make a one-off donation a few days back. Happy to with Libra put up monthly.
He allows he set up secure at anhonesthost.com/cart.php ?GID equals 17, and that brings up a page where you can donate $10 one time, or $10 on a monthly basis, $20 one time, $20 monthly, or $5 one time, or $5 monthly. So need to do that as well. It'd be just handy to support his hosting costs of HPR, and you're supporting the other BinRev projects as well.
Excellent idea.
Yeah, and then there are other fees associated with HPR as well. So like domain registration and paying for the Mumble server and stuff. So we'd like to thank the person who allows us to do that. Stank pays for the .com. My wife graciously allows me to pay for the other ones and the Mumble server. So there you go. I'm looking at her here now.
Well, as you should.
So switch to EA module taglib no longer supported in cPanel. So I think we're up to date on the issues. Anything else that we had in any other business?
There was the issue of we're now using archive.org to a much larger extent, since we're redirecting all our audio that way, or our feeds that way. So, and they're currently having a funding drive where if you contribute, they have a generous supporter, as they put it, who will match donations 3-1. So if you give them $5, it becomes 20. So
whoa, cool. Yeah, I'll do that
if
now.
If anybody would be, I put the links in the any other business part of the show notes for this show.
Cool.
So.
Great, and okay. I'll mention that tomorrow on the HBR 24-hour, 26-hour show, the extravaganza that is my excuse to be out in the back room pottering around the whole day. Oops, my wife's here and has just seen that. I love you too, dear. Okay, I'll also be doing family time. Yes, yes, dear. Anything else, Kevin?
I just did an archive donation while we were online here.
Excellent. Yes.
Yes, good. Wonderful. Good. So the only other... Where do you want to go to now then, Ken?
We should do the comments that we missed. Oh, we should have done the comments first, Dave.
Well, we don't have to stick to the same order. So I thought you were being...
You know, it drives you were being nuts.
Inventive and
spontaneous.
Spontaneous.
Yarp. Well, shall we go to...
Someone discovered Dave's show from last year.
Yes, yes, indeed. That's right, actually. Yes, last November. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So I'll start, shall I?
Yep.
Show 2163, which was me doing one of the Orc series. Ron Strelecki, who we've heard from as well elsewhere, said about that episode. Love the episode and the series. I think that in your Hello World example that demonstrates the FS built-in variable, that's the field separator, the character U should not be a comma, but rather something distinct like a pipe or some other character that does not have a different context in language. I understand that typically FS will be switched to a comma, if anything, but as the print statement uses a comma for different function, it can be confusing. And he gives the instance of the example I used and how to it might be a good idea to alter it. So I might as well do my comment. So I said thanks for the comment. And when I wrote this example, it never occurred to me that it could be confusing. But now you pointed out, yes, it is. I think I was keen to show that minus F on the command line is the variable FS in the script. And having just shown an example of minus F with quotes around it, just continued, a comma with quotes around it, just continued to use it. I was also keen to make it clear that the comma in the print statement is where awk puts the contents of OFS, output field separator. So I guess I lost sight of the example in my enthusiasm, smiley face. I will consider modifying these notes in the light of your suggestion. So do you want to do his reply?
Yep. He says, I think if you put that as your suggestion in notes, that inside a print statement, awk interprets a comma as OFS, then that would be perfect. When learning any language, context variation is a consistent bugaboo. Wait, why does a semicolon mean one thing here and something entirely, something else entirely there? So doing it deliberately and then pointing it out is definitely beneficial, and point out the internal workings of the language. Yeah, got a very good point.
Yeah, it's good. That's very constructive feedback. I haven't changed it yet, but I will do that when I get a second.
Yeah, but do you reference it in the show, though? Because then if you make reference to it in the show and the show notes don't reflect it, then that could be a problem.
I'll need to check that, but I could always put it in as an addendum to say this might be confusing, so this is what it means, just to enlarge on it a little bit.
Absolutely.
Put note or something like that.
Yeah. Do you want to do the next one?
So this was awk 2184, it's GNU awk part 5 by Be Easy. And we had ZZ or ZZ perhaps saying, please do something about your sound quality. It's just painful to listen to constant pops, clicks, squeaks, and booms, etc.
And I replied with a lecture. Hi ZZ, I had to listen to this show again and the context came through loud and clear. Sure, there are some artifacts in this show, but if you listen to other shows from BZ, you'll see that is not typical for his setup. We all have a bad audio day, but I would prefer to get the audio to get shows that are imperfect over not getting perfect shows. Our golden rule is any audio is better than no audio. Thanks for listening. Thanks for taking the time to comment. But we are always interested in hearing from our listeners. Perhaps you should do a show and tell us about your tech history and any other story, like as long as it is of interest to hackers. So the old I did have a listen to the show, and it's But we have a golden rule here, Dave, as you know.
Yes. He'd had a problem using a particular microphone, and he hadn't realised it was quite so bad when it came through. So, these things happen, as you say. Yep. So the next one was a comment on another of the shows I was involved with, 2297 More Magnitude Favourites, which I did with Andrew Conway McNallu, and RTSN added a comment. Good stuff. Just wanted to say thanks for this. I really enjoyed the episode and some of the music. I find it kind of hard to find new music, so this is pretty great. So I pointed Andrew to this, and he was pretty chuffed that we got a comment so long, several months after the event. So
yeah, but that's the thing about HPR, and I think we touched on it last year, but it is so different doing this HPR compared to what I do in my J job, that everything is, you know, modern and it's going to be fast and we need to churn through stuff. Here, you need to be prepared for your stuff being available 12 years after the fact. You know, we're still getting comments, you know, from 12 years ago, and you go, fair enough.
Yeah.
It's the whole archive problem. It's a slow net is what we are. Or not slow net, but
very pleased that it still exists.
Yeah, that's cool. And all comments cheer up your day. It's always great to get feedback. And my build says it's alive. Well, it's been a long time, but I thought I'd just pop in here to give you a little closure. The motherboard sat on a shelf here for months, and I realized I would never probably use it. This is the one where he took a motherboard and he got it from his friend. He fixed all the caps and then was missing something and then left it. And then that was the end of the show and we never found out. And at the time, John Culp says he wanted to know what would happen, I think. Anyway, carrying on. So I brought the motherboard and CPU over to the lug and gave it to a buddy, Rusty One. Today I got this message from him.
It's alive.
Excellent. And John Culp says, do you want to read that one?
Yeah. Yes. So the last bit of that was, there you go, the cat repair work. John can stop staying up nights wondering. And John Culp replied, insomnia. Phew, thanks, Bill. I still have trouble sleeping, but at least it's not because of that motherboard, smiley face.
Nice. On the lost episode, I commented to in my Bill, I'm all set, as in I got a... I got the PCB for doing his thingy. And unfortunately, there are three surface-mounted components in it. And my gosh, are they small. But that said, since I posted this, I found a video of somebody doing a Big Clive-type build on one of these. And the only thing that I needed was some really thin solder, which I managed to find. So tomorrow, I am planning on doing this.
Oh, good luck. Yes.
Live on the 24-hour show, which you will have heard by,
there by the time video, you hear this. It'll be too late. YouTube. that will be wonderful. Yes, I also have a surface mount component device sitting here that I've been slightly reluctant to set the soldering iron to.
I'll tell you what, we can do it together, Dave.
Yeah. I'll nip over your way and bring
this
soldier now.
This is small. Yeah, this board, I think, cost me around my wife, thankfully, is listening to some music, so she won't hear that. She's just taking off her headphones. To do this, I decided that I'd get a new soldering iron because the soldering iron I had was crap. So that was €25. And then I was thinking, I can't even see some of these things. So I bought three different magnifying glasses. I got them for my birthday. So this is turning out to be the most expensive component tester ever. And it's still not connected.
You'll use them more. You'll use them again.
Yeah, I will. Soldering iron is such a joy to use. Oh, my God, the difference.
Which one have you got?
The one you recommended.
Oh, very good. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's
and
much
it heats
better
up
than...
so fast, and yeah. you just yeah. put on the solder, it touches it, and it, boom, instantaneously. Oh, really? The last soldering iron I had was absolutely terrible. This temperature-controlled one, it's... only around $25. If you're buying a soldering iron at all, get one of these. It's absolutely cool. And I got loads of nibs and stuff as well. So I'll be trying out some of them tomorrow as I try and solder this thing.
Cool.
Well, I said I was going to do it tomorrow many, many times. But okay, moving on. So amateur roundtable number 3, various hosts. Comment by Ken Fallon. This is the visualization of waves. The Freak Labs have a thingy to show you what waves look like, and that's really cool. For I was struggling in that episode to visualize what a wave looked like and how it went through, and they have some very good animations. So when I collect these, I'm putting them as addendums to that show note, to that show, so that there will be a collection of this information over time.
Very good. I have to say I haven't checked that one out yet, but I certainly will do. It looks like it could be good. So the next comment was to 2417 Transmitter Crusoe, which was JWP's show, and it was from Busy, said a different time. You brought back a lot of old memories when you mentioned Transmitter. I thought it was a unique potential game changer in the CPU market, but it no push to be what?
It I can't made pass no that. Push.
Yeah, it didn't achieve what was expected to break into the monolithic market forces at the time. Bummer, he says. Thanks for sharing your find, the story, and that it still works. Smiley face.
I think a lot of it is down to timing. Sometimes innovative things that come through, like the N900, for example, it's just not the time for it. and it takes a while. And then the AMD processor comes along and essentially does, well, it doesn't do the same, but it is a lower power. It's tapping into the same sort of need or, yeah, purpose, selling point, I guess. And then it goes off. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a shame. It's a shame that there's many, many very interesting things that have gone by the wayside for no good reason other than the wind was in the wrong direction, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. We had the next one. There's a lot of comments this month, Dave. New comment system, yes. I'm guessing. Well, now we're encouraging people to do comments, as before we were always like, the comments, ugh. Netbooks, Keeping an Old Friend Alive by Biza. And this is by Gumnos. Netbooks and Lightweight OSs. I've got a couple of netbooks, and I've found that the BSDs, particularly OpenBSD, but also FreeBSD and NetBSD, run quite nicely on them. I also run Debian Stable on one, and it's pretty uneventful experience.
Cool.
Which is what you want.
It's good to know.
So the next one was on the Kickstarter Postmortem by Clartu2422. Busy, busy again. Kickstarter Revisited, he says. I noticed that you mentioned that you're not a salesman and described a person you knew that was great at creating hype about a product which may go against your personality. But I would say that to get best results from other people's stories about any Kickstarter-like service is to have a prototype ready to go. It shows that you have something besides an idea and some direction, which is why you need the money to bring it into production. I don't like selling either, but if you believe in the game idea, had a prototype, rules, card, layouts, etc., then the idea will sell itself. People will see value in the what you are trying to achieve, thus you're not selling anything, but creating something people want to bring to fruition because it intrigues them as much as you. I just wanted to bring another perspective. Ideas sell themselves because people see value in it. Yeah, good point.
Yeah, good point. That one has been quite an interesting, the feedback on it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's quite an art to get a Kickstarter to work. And if you don't fully appreciate that art, then, you know, I guess you could easily fail. But yeah, I do sympathize with Clartu's stance on this, that I don't think I would really know how to play it and be reluctant to do the salesman type thing personally. But yeah, interesting. That's the last comment, by the way, from the previous month's shows, earlier shows.
So what are these other two, Information Underground Control thing?
They have they're from last month. Yeah, yeah. If you look at the
oh, we've already done them.
We've already done them. Yes, people are going to be so amazed that we talk about this every week, every month.
It's a thing. It's tradition now. Do something three times in a row, it becomes a tradition.
Because we're using a text form, whereas on the website I coloured them in green with a note saying "Don't read these." But in the text version, I didn't do that. Anyway, it was fun. It was an interesting interlude.
Okay, I think we're done here, folks. I need to up the number of people on the Mumble server and change the links on the website before I go. Okay.
All right.
Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio.
Join us now and share the software.
You'll be free.
Free hackers.
You'll be free. Thanks, Kevin.
All righty.
See you tomorrow. Bye. Yeah,
probably.
See you later.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.